welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast for June 4th. It's already June.
It is June, baby.
It's brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and in the background, you can already hear Jim Allen talking. What's happening, buddy?
Me talking. Wow, what a rare thing that is.
Well, can anyone stop you?
She used to call me the ever-ready, the Energizer Bunny.
I don't see you jumping much, but all right.
Okay, anyway, I'm doing well, Mr. Gibson. How are you?
I'm feeling like a king.
Are you now?
And you would know what the heck I'm talking about.
I do know. I know what, since you're smiling, I know what you're talking about.
Well, we're not here to talk about hockey, so.
We're not because I can't talk about hockey.
Oh, well, you could. You could say shark, and then not
shark
much else.
Shark tank.
This week we got an interview with Jose Fernandez of the Rakuten Eagles. We're going to talk about the...
He's with the Eagles now.
Stop it. We're going to talk about...
it's GPS.
We're going to talk about Toshiya Sugiuchi's no-hitter last week, hit on a few other topics, and we have a great listener question to answer. So let's start clearing the bases. All right, so on Wednesday, I had the great fortune of being at Tokyo Dome and got to talk to Jose Fernandez. And he was on the show last year. Show would be volume 1, number 24, if you want to go back and listen, because it's a pretty interesting interview. And I think it was one of our better shows. But you don't remember, right, Jim?
I remember all the good ones.
I remember all the good ones. Now, so the Eagles got no hit that night, and that's why I say it was my great fortune to be there. I've gotten to see, it was the second no hitter that I was at, since okay. I've been covering baseball in Japan, so I was lucky.
You've been at three games, because we were at one game where there was no hit.
But it was not one pitcher, but yeah, we were in the perfect game in 2007 at the Japan Series.
Yep, in Nagoya,
and two pitchers. Daisuke Yamai of the Dragons and the closer Hitoki Iwase finished up
Correct.
In the ninth
Correct.
To combine for a perfect game, but I was told that night that it really didn't count, so I guess I shouldn't count because it wasn't one pitcher.
Wow. That's well, you know what? They won the game.
Hey, it was perfect to me, buddy. It was perfect.
Hey. Anyway, so moving along.
So yeah, Jose, you know, we talked. He is a great interview anyway, but he was. He's better when we turn the tape recorder off. And I wish I could share a lot of the stuff that we discussed, but we.
Yeah, well.
But we can't do that on the show. But in time, we'll get to bits and pieces of what he talked about. But it kind of reminded me, he told me that some of the players, and this is before the game, so I should have known that something was going to happen, because he said some of the players were, and I'll change the language a little bit, they were shaking in their britches, let's put it, at the thought of going up against Toshiya Sugiuchi that night.
Really?
And it reminded me of something that Yu Darvish said when he was doing his Sayonara press conference earlier this year that we both got to watch together at the office, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
And Darvish said that one of the reasons he decided that he wanted to go to the majors was because a lot of players would come up to him before games and say, you know, we know we're not going to get a hit off of you today, and we know you're going to beat us. And they had that already beaten mindset, whether they were kidding or not. He said it affected him. And, you know, when Jose said on Wednesday that some of the players were already shaking in their britches before the game at the thought of going up against him, it's no surprise that they got no hit. And he wasn't in the lineup that day.
Okay.
In fact, he was on deck in case the man who ended up making the last out, which was Ryo Hijirisawa, Jose would have been a pinch hitter. But he wasn't in the lineup that day.
Right.
So, interesting.
Hijirisawa had a hell of an at bat. Excuse me, I can't say hell. He had a heck of an at bat.
Yeah, he had a good at bat. And Nakashima, the guy who ends up getting the walk to blow the perfect game, I actually think he struck out on the 1-2 pitch. And the umpire wiggled, but he didn't raise the hand. And I was sitting in the press box raising my hand. I'm like, it's
all right. Well, he made up for it when he rung out. Did he sell on a pitch that was out of the zone? So that's all right.
You think? Well, out of the zone. It went near the zone.
It was close enough.
You
know, it was close enough.
He couldn't do it twice, so He couldn't let a good pitch go by twice without calling one of them a strike. So he's one of the few players. Now, I don't know the exact number because I don't remember. And maybe Michael Westbay can chime in on this when he's got time. But Jose is one of the few number of imports who have played with four teams.
Right.
I know that one of them is Brian Sikorsky, and you named the other one, who was Jeremy Powell. That's right. Yes. That's right.
He didn't barely play for the Hawks in a couple games, but he was with Oryx, Kintetsu, Yomiuri, and SoftBank. Although the Oryx Kintetsu link is a little tenuous because he didn't really have a choice. He had to go to Oryx after Kintetsu folded. The foreign players became their property.
Right, and I don't think he did all that much with SoftBank, but
no.
Yeah.
After all the hullabaloo, that was pretty much almost a non sequitur.
Now Jose has done, this is his second stint with the Eagles, and he's done two stints with the Lions, so it should really count for six, if you ask me.
Fernando Seguinal, how many teams Segi played with? Oryx, Nippon Ham. Oh, he played twice with Oryx. He came back last time with Oryx. So that's only three plus one.
Yeah. And I was looking at Jose's numbers, and he's only hit one home run this year, but I think he's got 203 home runs. And if he'd have stayed with Lotte that first year, after that first year, he would have hit 170 home runs with him.
right. Well, you know what? He wanted to stay with Lotte.
But
Bobby Valentine didn't want him to play third base.
Mm.
At least Bobby Valentine liked him as a DH or first baseman. And Bobby said, I can't say what Bobby liked or disliked, but he told me he had recommended Jose to them. Jose had been playing in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And he had recommended him to Lotte, and he didn't really want him to be a third baseman. And when he came, for whatever reason, Bobby's a manager, he gets to pick his team, and Jose went to the Lions, where he made a regular habit of trampling the Marines 2004. And Bobby did get a little annoyed that we regularly had headlines. I wasn't that conscious of it, but I had written at least one headline that was Fernandez released by Marines, ruins Marines. So I heard about that, but it was good natured. And, so anyway, yeah, he did hit a bunch of home runs his first 2 years, first year with, Lotte, and the next year with Cebu.
Yep. So, let's go ahead and take a listen to the interview.
All right, talking to Jose Fernandez. Are you surprised the Lions let you go in the offseason?
In a way, yes. The way the negotiation was going on, no. But in a way, yes, because Lions, the way the past, 4 or 5 years, they head in a different direction than they were before. They were, they're becoming, it's a different organization. I'm not going to, talk bad about anybody, but they're just different organization. So in a way, yes, when we start talking to them, they made it basically, a financial decision that, they think is better than for their teams, which, I think it was not, but, it is what it is.
Okay. All right. Now, how is it being back with the Eagles?
Great organization. Actually, I always loved play here. The fans are great. The front office are great here too. They accept me. They welcome me warm, and I'm glad I'm back.
They approach you?
Yeah. They are, baseball is a business. A lot of people would think it's not, but it's all business. And, especially for foreigners, whenever we come down to after the season, it's going to come down to business part of it for them and for us. So that's why I'll change the team, is because even though I keep a good relationship with everybody, the teams that I play, there's always people in the office, managers and players likes me as a person or as a player. Either way, I've been able to maintain a relationship with them. You know how important that is in the Japanese, community, society. And, they normally approach me. A lot of people in the office always was rooting for me and always wanted me back.
Okay, good. Now, how's the team changed since you were...
The There's changes. There's you know, new players have developed. They're getting better. You know, they're you know, the international scout are doing a different job. You know, they're focusing more on the little parts that they need. And I think that overall it's been becoming, you know, effective, and players are getting their results, and teams is getting the result that they expect. And I think we head in the right direction.
Now, you've played, especially with this team, for a couple of legends as managers, Nomura and now Hoshino.
Indeed, you know, it's good to play with those guys because, like you said, they're legend. They're players, they're all, you know, old players, now managers that has a long history here. And, you know, that rubs in a lot of players. They have a lot of respect from the other teams and from the, you know, players and from the other managers. So it's always good.
What's the difference, the biggest difference between those two guys?
One was a pitcher, the other one was a catcher.
No, come on, as a manager.
Well, I don't know. They're different style, you know. Like I said, believe it or not, you know, that is the truth. One is a pitcher, one's a catcher. You know, one think is a pitcher, the other think is as a catcher. You know, you know, this is my first year with Hoshino. I really, you know, experienced only 20, 30 games with him. I play a lot against him, but, you know, they have some similarity, you know, like you said, because they play for a long time. They're, you know, old school players, managers. So they kind of some similarity, but at the same time, they're different, you know. Like I said, one thing is a pitcher, the other thing is a catcher.
What are some of the things that are similar?
You know, it's old school. You know, it's different than Watanabe. You know, Hoshino's a guy who's more emotional. He's a guy who, you know, things have to be done in the old way, the old style. You know, players, you know, like in the minor leagues, players have to wear pants and showing their socks, you know. It's different because, you know, you're in 2012 right now. You know, 15 years ago, you played the game in a different way. You train different. You work out different. Now there's more technology. There's symmetric. There's, you know, 350, you know, newspaper now, TV. So it's a different ball game, and you have to adjust to it. You know, these guys adjusted, but they still keep their same old school style.
You also played under hitting coach Dave Ogilboy with the Lions, and he's here too. Oh, you did not?
No, Dave was when I was with the Orix. That was the only I came. He came after I was there.
Okay. So how has he influenced the team?
Pretty good. I think Dave is good for the young players. You know, he's a young guy with a little mentality, a little different than most of the, you know, coaches, Japanese coaches. And I think it's good for baseball and it's good for the team. You know, he gets his point across with the young guys in a way that help them, you know. And I think he brings a lot of, like, the Watanabe style from the Lions. You know, young guys with talent, and, you know, he try to maximize those talent from the play, which is that's the bottom line, the way you're supposed to do. And also keep them loose and keep it relaxed much as you can.
What kind of work does he do with them?
You know, more or less, it's mental. You know, baseball is more mental. You know, yes, you always work in the physical part of it, but it's more mental part, the preparation for the game. Make sure that you don't pressure Japanese players or you know, people in general. They pressure themselves into in a way that they don't produce because the pressure, you know, overcome them. You know, when you're playing baseball, it is pressure. There's 40, 30,000 people in the fans, but at the same time, it's a game, and you got to be able to go out there and enjoy it. You know, he brings that happy, you know, mentality, that golf mentality. It's like, go out and have fun. And, you know, a lot of times that helps the players.
Now, I wrote about it on my blog when you made this play. You made a fantastic play at Koshien in a game that you guys eventually won against the Tigers. And you guys have been doing really well, even though Tanaka Makun has been out. What has been the key for that?
It's a team effort. Pitchers are doing the job. Tanaka was out. Somebody else came up from the minor leagues and stepped up. The young guys are throwing the ball well. You know, we getting hits when the time that I get hits. Like, you know, my average doesn't say so, but my RBIs say so. As you know, we getting the RBIs when we have to. We getting the hits when we have to. And it's a team effort, you know. And we're playing defense. Yeah, we're playing good defense. You know, we work hard in the defense. And I understand that in the bottom line, like that main play that you mentioned, you know, that saved the game. We basically won that game because of that. Because, you know, if that ball would go, if I would have made that play, 3-run would have scored. Who knows what would have happened? So yeah, we're doing that. We play, you know, as a team. We're doing the little things that we need to do.
And you guys are doing it well. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you again, Jose, for taking the time. Yeah, he was really nice and sat down with me before the games. That was good.
Yep.
What stood out in the interview for you?
Well, obviously one reason why I guess Lotte will be looking at him next. he's a great guy to have on your team. And I think he's helped in you know, of course, the year in Oryx when I believe he was hurt and he did. Well, hold on. Yeah, the year he was with Oryx and he was hurt and he didn't play very well and then came back at midseason with Cebu. But he's almost always played well. And he's a good teammate, and he's a good people person, and people want him to be back. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him go back to Cebu or go back to Lotte. Not, I mean, the clock is ticking, but those things are always possible.
Right. Well, it was interesting when we sat down immediately. I wanted to say, because he's played under Nomu-san, you know, Katsuya, and he's playing under Seiichi Hoshino now. And I wanted to say great managers or great field generals, and I stopped myself. And I think something slipped out, like great something, and he heard it. And he says, and I said, okay, well, at least they're legends. They're legends of baseball here. And he said, yes. He was very much on board with that. And I think, you know, when he says one of them thinks like a pitcher and one of them thinks like a catcher, I think he's talking about that conservatism that Hoshino employs a lot. And it bothered me. It bothered me when I was in Nagoya and I was just starting out covering games and watching strategy and looking at what they did and trying to get an idea of what he was thinking. This is Hoshino when he was doing some of the things he was doing. And, you know, he's fine with getting one run, playing for one run a lot and trying to protect that one run by putting the best defense out there that he can and just shun the offensive side sometimes to the point where I think it's frustrating. And I would imagine it's frustrating for foreign players.
Well, I remember, I didn't really, I mean, actually they had a very good offensive team when he was in Nagoya until 1999, you know, when he came back. And that team in 1999 was not a terribly good offensive team. And, you rarely win a Japan series by having, a bunch of guys who are slap hitters and bunters and runners. And given a choice for a DH, he had Yusuke Torigoi DH once, I think. And, this is a guy who's, I liked him a little bit when he was in the minors, but he never really developed as a hitter. He was a light hitting shortstop. I don't remember if he was a DH, but it was somebody like him. You know, it was a light hitting, speedy guy.
Jinno,
yes. You are correct. It was, I'm forgetting his first name.
I am too. I just remember because I couldn't figure for the life of me why he was the DH.
And they had a guy on the bench who was a minor league slugger who really never played much, but this guy was dynamite in the Western League with the Hawks, and he played a bit for the before or after the Dragons. He played for the Swallows as well. This is a guy who could really, he was a Hatakayama type of player.
Uh-huh.
But he just never really got a shot because he wasn't a good fielder and he wasn't such a great hitter that, you know, they just let him play first base. They, you know, he was good enough that they would just complain about his defense. Anyway, he could have been a DH. He would have been an improvement over Mr. Jinno.
Yeah.
And anyway, that's what he wanted. He wanted defense at his DH. That shows you how extreme.
Yeah, the conservatism drove me nuts then, and I don't know. I think he's changed a little bit as the Eagles manager. It seems like they're trying to put together a team. Let's just say that they'll turn their eyes, they'll squint their eyes on the defensive end once in a while in place or at the risk of putting a better offensive player out there on occasion. But in terms of strategy or lack thereof. They play for one run more than not.
Well, that's the old style of playing. I think in Japan there are some things to be said for it, which I've already said before and I'm not going to repeat here. But yeah, is he old school? Yeah, definitely. I think of course Jose's thing is this thing about the regimentation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a real fundamental topic with him because when he was with the Lions in 2004, in 2005, and particularly 2005 when okay, Nakajima came up in 2004 and he was a big hit, and Kataoka and Takumi Kuriyama came up the next year in 2005, and Nakamura was a little bit after that, and he was talking about these young kids playing ball like Latin kids, you know, enjoying the game and having a manager like at Tsutomu Ito sort of, you know, trying to keep them in line. There's so much of that in Japan. Last time we, last week we were talking about, the seniority system. And I kept thinking of Marty Brown talking about the negative influence of older players on teams here. And, two stories from Marty Brown was his problem with Takeshi Yamasaki. Now, Takeshi Yamasaki is a wonderful guy. I love him. But when he gets into that milieu in the team, he's, you know, where he's the old guy. He's like a mob boss. You know, it's fetch my tea and do what I tell you and don't make mistakes. If I catch you, you'll be sorry.
Right.
And a lot of players, don't respond to that. And, that can be a negative influence. And, Jose's thinking it has always been, you got to play baseball with a certain amount of joy and feeling. You have to be expressive. You can't just be a robot. And I think that's so true. And I think he brings that to the teams. I think Alex Ramirez brings the same thing to his teams.
I think so, because a lot of these old style managers, a lot of these old fashioned teams or old fashioned thinkers, their players don't smile on the field.
Well,
you know what I notice about the fighters this year is that a lot of the players are smiling on the field because the manager is, I mean, he's positive.
Huh, that's interesting.
I mean, if you get to see some games watching, you see, you know, if they do something good, he at least acknowledges it with a smile. If they do something not so good, you know, he might meet them with a smile and say, hey, kid, you know, this is what you're supposed to do, and let's try to do that next time.
Wow.
But the guys like Hoshinoa and even Takagi with the Dragons this year, they just kind of sit there and with this, these stoical looks on their faces. And,
yeah.
And you try to chisel a smile in there and it somehow it returns to the original form.
Wow. Well, you know, it sort of reminds me, you know, of course you'll see the smile when things turn ridiculous, you know, when things get so silly that there's nothing you can do but laugh, but that's really not what you're looking for.
Right.
So, but yeah, so he's had that, and I think when he talked about Dave Okubo in that respect. Now, this is Dave Okubo is a real polarizing character, and he's a real complicated character, and he had a complicated career. It wasn't much of a career, but it was very complicated. So, it is interesting that he saw, now I don't know, I haven't spoken to Dave in a couple of years since he was the first team, since 2009, I guess, when he was still the first team coach, batting coach with the Lions. But he's, I don't know, he's, whether, I can't say he's honest, because I've gotten some answers from him, which were just completely, the only way they could be on, you could consider them honest is if,
as if he believed in him.
Yeah, if he believed something that was really ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he wasn't, you knew he didn't believe what he was saying. He was just given lip service. So, well, I think that was a matter of, you know, he doesn't care what the media thinks.
That's probably the case. And in the interview, I made the mistake of saying to Jose that he worked under Dave Okubo, but they did overlap. It's just that Okubo, as you looked up for me, and thank you for that, I appreciate it, was working with the farm team,
right?
The year that they overlapped, so I thought they had worked together. So,
and I think Jose probably showed up in June. I think that's just about when Dave got his walking papers.
Yeah, for things, for unmentionables that we won't mention here. But yeah, it was a good interview. I mean, they're playing fairly well, and hopefully he can figure out the right way to use all these young players. He's using more young players than I remember him using. Maybe
right. Maybe
out of necessity. Maybe
because I think it's out of necessity. I think he has used young players in the past. He isn't Hoshino too is a very interesting character. A lot of his appeal with players is that he's kind of a, you kind of a man's man. He's very, he's like the line from Casablanca when somebody asks about a, you know, what kind of guy is he? He says, well, he's like any other man, only more so. he's extreme. You know, he's extreme. He's an extreme slap you on the back guy, and he's also extremely, he has extreme beliefs.
Smack you in the face kind of a guy, too.
Smack you in the back, smack you across the face, break your ribs. He's whatever he does big. He lives large, you know, in the best way of saying it, in the most accurate way of saying it. And people respond to that, or people are repelled by it. He's, as I said, he has a doghouse. He knows, he will manipulate a team sometimes by taking players who are marginal and sort of making them the poster child for bad behavior. He did this with Atsushi Fujimoto with the Tigers. Fujimoto was a good player, but he was a little on the timid side, and Hoshino's way of motivating his team was by picking on him in front of everybody else.
Well, he had a lot to pick on after this particular game. Sugiuchi threw the 85th no-hitter. He was the 75th pitcher to throw one.
Right.
He just missed the perfect game. And the last time, this is the second no-hitter of this season. And I remember we've talked about in the past that there's so many slap and run guys that it's hard to get no-hitters.
Sure.
Do you remember the last time there was a year in which we had more than one no-hitter?
What was the last year we had a no-hitter?
That's correct. But what year was that?
I'm going to say it was 2006.
It was 2006. Wow, you got all the, you're the man with all the answers. I got more trivia for you. You're not getting away that easily. But
we're not even started, dude.
Masahiro Yamamoto threw before this year in 2006 in September 16th, he had thrown the last no-hitter. And Rick Gutterson of the Yakult Swallows threw one on May 25th of 06.
That was before he started using hair growth.
So he says. Now, since 1936, what year had the most no-hitters?
Oh, I know we had 3 1 year a number of years back, but I couldn't tell you.
There were 3 in 8 seasons.
And what was
but
the most
was 1940. There were 5.
Yeah. Well, that's because they were playing with this soggy rag ball and everything was about the bunt and defense, and the playing conditions were terrible. And if the guys think the ball now is terrible, get yourself a DeLorean and a
Field of Dreams.
Special effects and go back in time, baby.
In 1943, there were 4 no-hitters. So if we can have another one, the last time there were 3 no-hitters was 1973. So that was that's a little bit of trivia. Now, Sugiuchi had, 4 fly ball outs to outfielders, and he struck out 14, and he threw only 108 pitches, which is pretty.
And he
should have thrown fewer than 100 pitches because he had to work so hard in the ninth inning.
He had to work so hard for the last two hitters. Like he threw 15 pitches to the last two guys.
Yeah. And he'd gone up against Masahiro Tanaka, the ace of the Eagles. He'd gone up against him 5 times previously, and he hadn't won any of them. He was 0-4.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, with one no decision. So he figured out a way to beat him. he had to be almost perfect. So he and Kenta Maeda now have thrown no hitters this year. Any ideas who might throw another one this year?
No, exactly. Who knows? No, I mean, you just can't predict. Somebody who's good facing a team that's perhaps not at its best, I mean, that would be, that's the ideal situation. Usually you find in the majors that a lot of no-hitters happen when teams are, have just traveled,
mm-hmm.
and or late in the season when the games don't count. Mm-hmm. Where they're playing a lot of games in a row, and then bammo. More no-hitters happen in September than any other month in the majors. So
yeah, and the Eagles were a no-hit victim of Gutterson in 2006.
I knew there was a connection between them and him. I was trying to remember what it was. I was thinking he didn't play for the Eagles.
No, he didn't.
He just played for the Swallows, and he beat them when he was with the Swallows, and then he went to the Hawks.
All right, let's move on to a few notes now. Tetsuya Yamaguchi of the Yomiuri Giants has a scoreless string where he has appeared in 24 consecutive games since the start of the season without allowing a run, and that tied a mark set by...
the Daimajin, Kazuhiro Sasaki.
That's right, of the base
time. 1998, the year he was the, drumroll please, Central League MVP. And then 1999 was the year when he was hurt, and they essentially damaged his arm, I believe, when he was hurt because they wanted him to pitch in the All-Star game. So they brought him back from the farm team to pitch in the All-Star game. And as far as I can tell, he didn't pitch again the rest of the year until the last game of the season. And he made a farewell performance at Yokohama Stadium, and then he went to the Mariners.
Right.
So good. Thanks for the All-Star game, guys.
Thank you. Now, I remember our front office guy talking about Yamaguchi about 3 years ago on the cable TV, the Giants, the G-plus cable station.
G-plus.
Yeah, and I remember the question was asked him, did you expect Yamaguchi to be this good?
Mm.
And I don't remember who it was. I wish I remembered who was speaking. It's just probably some front office rep, not Kiyotake or anybody. And they said, well, of course we didn't. That's why we signed him as a developmental roster guy. We didn't expect him to be this good, but we're glad that he developed.
Well, Hara basically, he worked out, and Hara said, well, okay, let's get him. And he was off the radar. And here's an interesting note that when you remember all the fuss about Junichi Tazawa?
Yes, I do.
A couple years ago, and some of the teams saying, we don't want players to go to the States. We want to banish those players. Anybody who goes to the States before they play in Japanese baseball, we want to keep them, that we're going to have a ban on them for a couple of years. They won't be able to play. And of course, what would have happened is at that time, two of the best players in Japan, Gigi Sato and Yamaguchi, would have been prohibited from playing in Japanese ball under the rule they were proposing. Hmm. Because Yamaguchi played in the Pioneer Play League. He played in single A ball in somewhere in Montana, and of course Gigi Sato played rookie ball and single A ball for the Phillies
organization. Yeah, I
sure.
Remember that. Yeah.
Not because he wanted to be in the majors. He just wanted to try playing ball in the U.S. So that is kind of interesting. And of course the Giants had two, under Hara, the Giants had two consecutive rookies of the year who first signed on developmental contracts.
That's right. Yamaguchi.
And Tetsuya Yamaguchi and Matsumoto.
Yeah. Another Tetsuya, right?
Another Tetsuya. That's why I was confusing.
There's too many Tetsuyas out there.
There are indeed.
Mothers, let's think, you know, more creatively out there sometimes, yeah. Another note, on Sunday, Tomoaki Kanemoto of the Hanshin Tigers became the oldest player at 44 years and 8 months to reach 1,500 RBIs. So congratulations to him.
A lot of older players who never get that far, so yeah.
Well, it took him the most games
right.
of anyone to get there. And it seems like every time he has a milestone, or breaks a record for the oldest something, he's breaking a Hiromitsu Ochiai record. Because this was another one.
Yeah, we've had a few of those. I mean, this has been a year for the old guys. We had, of course, the two 2000 hit guys, and the 1,999 hit guys.
Soon, he says with air quotes to be 2,000, Mr. Hiroki. Mr. Hiroki, my back hurts. Yeah.
Yeah, Inaba and Miyamoto are both up there. And of course, Miyamoto was one of the few guys who, like Ochiai, played university ball and played corporate ball before turning pro. And Kanemoto came out of college. And then the interesting thing about Kanemoto is you have a guy who was basically, let's see, how old was he when he got a regular job, which was 1995. He was 27th?
Yeah, he was a fourth-round pick in 92.
91.
The information I saw said 92. I'll check his
one draft. He was a rookie in 1992.
I will check as we talk. Go ahead.
Anyway, he was a fourth-round pick in 1991, and it took him 3 years to essentially establish himself. He was used as a pinch hitter, and he was originally used as a platoon outfielder for the Carp, and they just had a zillion outfielders. And Marty Brown told me one time that when he showed up in Hiroshima, one of the things he saw was taking the rookies who made mistakes over near the foul pole and having some of the veterans throw baseballs at them.
Oh, it's just like at the carnival.
So this is, you know, this is how you treat your rookies. And one of the things they used to do at the Carp was platoon everybody. It was a big platooning. It was sort of like platooning was the way to go then in Hiroshima. They must have platooned at about five positions, and Kanemoto was one of them. So he took a while. It's hard to imagine a player that good and that talented taking that long to break through, but he certainly wasted. You know, it showed a lot of longevity, so you had to think he had something going before that. So anyway, which brings us, are you?
Yeah, it was 1991. I found it. 1991. Yep.
As I was mentioning to John before the start of the broadcast here, or the podcast, as it were, the other players came out of the 1991 draft. This is my favorite one. And the players.
They came out of 91 or they were the same round?
They came out of the same round in 1991.
Okay.
The fourth round.
Right.
Of the 1991 draft, which is so egregious in terms of quality. Four guys who really weren't any big shakes, which is why they were taken in the fourth round.
Exactly.
And we have, basically Japan's all-time hit leader, Ichiro Suzuki,
mm-hmm.
who was essentially a high school pitcher who the Oryx Blue Wave wanted as an outfielder and didn't think he could hit despite his hitting close to 350 and 385 as a minor leaguer in the Western League. And then we had Kanemoto. We had another high school kid, Norihiro Nakamura, who was a catcher at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We had Shinjiro Hiyama. We had a couple of mediocre pitchers in that group, too. But that's three superstars. Well, okay, one major star, two superstars, and one very good regular.
Right. Yeah,
and a couple of relievers. So I'll take it.
Yep. I mean, you have to. I mean, part of it is developing these players once you get them, putting them in a good situation. And you look at just the way you're talking about Kanemoto. He had such a high level of competition. He had to raise his level, and that made him good. Maybe the other guys weren't so polished. What's that?
Maybe throwing baseballs at him helped.
I'm a carnival boy, and my name is Target.
He could have played in Minnesota.
Get better or get lost, yeah.
And Suzuki, I mean, he had a manager who really didn't want him to play because he said he couldn't hit. So, yeah, that I'm sure that helped.
Another note I wanted to get to was Atsunori Inaba of the Nippon Ham Fighters, who...
Another milestone?
Well, no. At the first check of fan voting, he was the leader, which struck me as very odd. I thought two things. I thought we are lacking a great superstar, and the other thing was that, hey, the fans really know what's going on because this is a guy. Because this is a guy who's leading. He was the Triple Crown candidate here. So I mean, I don't know. He's not a superstar, so to speak. So
well, I'll tell you, if I had to pick one player who was the best player in the best, if I had to pick one player who was the best player in the Pacific League the last 4 years, I'd probably say it was Inaba.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I tell you this, I don't remember how clutch he was before and how much of a determined hitter he was when he was with the Swallows, but he's been very steady with the Fighters ever since he got there, no matter where they put him. And I remember he was batting second at times. I don't remember under which manager, because it seems they've been changing some managers so often since 2006 with Trey and
But well, he's over there's third manager there. The thing about Inaba, which is kind of funny, is that, you know, last year we had Uchikawa, Seichi Uchikawa, go to the Pacific League, and he was really the first Central League star in his prime to move to the Pacific League as a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, actually, you know, it's I don't know, it's not quite a trick question, but Inaba was there before him. Of course, the thing was that when Inaba went, he was kind of like at the end of his career. It's like his career was over, and he wanted to go to the majors. And the only reason he ended up at Nippon Ham was because he couldn't get a guaranteed major league contract. He wasn't going to sign a minor league deal, so he came back to Japan, and the Fighters took him.
Yep, which is, yeah, we talked about that a couple shows back. And okay. Fortunately for him, he developed, you know, he might have thought, or other teams might have thought he was at the end of the career, but I think he was right in the middle and maybe peaking. The way he's produced the past four or five
seasons. Well, the thing is, he's had health issues. He's always had health issues, but he's never been, I think, as consistently healthy as he has been the last 4 or 5 years with the Fighters.
That's
just
true.
Just amazing.
That's true, too. All right, well.
And he played in his 1,500th game the other night with the Fighters, not ironically, but appropriately, at Jingu Stadium.
Good for him. And speaking of Jingu Stadium, what a great segue. Thank you for that setup. I wanted to talk about the Swallows, and to do that, I think we need to address our questions. So let's go to fielding questions.
Hi, John and Jim. Mike from Takorazawa calling you this time on the way to work in Tokyo, avoiding the traffic. My question concerns the whole Ballantyne affair. Twittergate, perhaps we can call it. I'm just wondering, I've never seen a player, I guess in the 30-plus years I've been watching baseball, I've never seen a player sent to the minors who is leading his league in home runs and RBIs at the time. Very perplexing. Of course, I've never seen a player tweeting in the midst of a ball game either, so I guess it's two for two in the Ballantyne case. My question concerns players like him who are farmed out during the season, foreign players and domestic. Do they still get paid their full salary when they are sent down to the farm team? Anyway, that's my question for this week. Thanks for taking it, and as always, love your show. Cheers.
All right, Mike in Takorazawa, our buddy, friend of the program. Thank you very much for the great question.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
The Swallows were in the midst of their worst skid in 39 years. They had lost 10 straight, and we have Mr. Ballantyne problem. So first let's address the question, which is, what do they do with the salaries when a player is sent in? And yeah,
nothing.
That's it, Mike. Nothing. Once you sign a salary at the beginning of the season, that's your pay, whether you play tiddlywinks on the farm or if you play bench tootsies with the guys on the first team.
Oh, God, that's too much information, dude.
Or you hit a bunch of home runs and you're really productive on the first team.
Yeah, because
salaries, as long as you're with the team.
There are no minor league. Well, actually, technically, the developmental contracts in Japan now are minor league salaries. But once you're on the 70-man roster and you have an NPB contract, then everyone's in the same boat. So you're not going to get a different treatment.
Right. And you can tell us how that works when a developmental player's moved up to the – at least to the farm team or to the even to the first team. How does that work?
Well, it doesn't matter whether they moved up to the first team or the farm team, but if they're going to be added to the roster, they can't play in the first team unless they're on the 70-man roster. And the 70-man roster will require them to have an NPB standard contract. So what'll happen is if they're on a minimum developmental contract, I think the minimum salary for developmental players is like 2.4 million yen a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the minimum salary for an NPB player is, I'm going to guess, about 4 or 5 million now. So they're going to have to get a pay raise.
Right, so they have to redo the contract to add them to the 70-man roster.
Exactly.
So Twittergate, that's a good one, Mike. I like that. I prefer to call it as Twittiot on the loose.
Wow.
I don't know. I did some homework, so my homework consists of calling a reporter I know and asking them. But I did it from home, so I hope that counts, teacher. And he said that there are no rules specified in any rule books about using social media. Right. And that
unless
anything...
certain companies.
Unless you work for certain companies. Now, he's not sure if the Swallows have their own rule written down somewhere and they've specified to the players what to do and what not to do, but he doubts it.
I doubt it, too. I doubt that they have that much forethought.
Yeah. In fact, when I told him that NFL players and NBA players are limited from using Twitter and other social media before games and they have a cooling down period after games, he was surprised to hear that. But I think even though Japan is a leader in technology and has been using some of these social media networks and everything, we're still a little bit newer at it over here.
I don't know if I think we're newer. I think we're older. You know, I think it's just that it's that old time way of doing things is still, it's that I don't know, that windmill that runs Japanese baseball that Jose Fernandez is tilting at like Don Quixote. You know, it's, I mean, I don't mean this as a drag on Jose. I mean it about, it's like, you're never going to get rid of the darn things. They're going to be doing things old fashioned way 50 years from now. And, some things will be, that's how we played back in the good old days, back in 2020. Anyway, and what I'm saying is that they're always going to do things, you know, and make excuses. This is Japan, so we're okay to be old-fashioned and do stupid things because we're Japan. And, so I don't think that's going to matter. It's baseball's its own little world, and it's proud of being backwards.
Yeah. When I first heard the story, and I saw a story, and I think I copied it and pasted it to you so you could read it, it didn't really say whether Valentin had tweeted during a game and then was sent down or tweeted because he was sent down. It just gave some information. But then I found another story that said he tweeted on a game on the 25th, on Friday, and then he was sent down on the 29th, in part because of the tweeting during the game. However, the main reason he was sent down was because of his attitude. He was throwing things on the bench when he would make outs. He was he forgot to cover on a play, and I wish I saw the replay on the TV news, but they didn't really have the right angle, and you couldn't really see what he was doing or where he was or where he started, so I didn't want to make a judgment on it. But he didn't cover on a defensive play, and he was actually really contributing to this 10 game losing streak. He was he was hitting .097 with 12 strikeouts in 10 games.
Well, that's like the thing.
It's a bad stretch. I know.
It was a bad stretch, and they weren't scoring. I think they scored at one point. They were 4 runs in 7 games or something.
Yeah, they were awful.
Yeah.
And someone wrote on the Facebook page, thank you for writing, I think it was Anthony Pang, who asked us a question last week and said that his defense wasn't good. And
his is on and off.
His defense, range-wise, his defense is never really that great, but he likes to show off his arm.
Yeah, he has an arm. It's just that sometimes he looks forward to throwing, you know, he looks forward to throwing so much that he forgets to catch the ball first. So he did that. I say sometimes. He did that once last year, and he's done it once this year.
Yeah.
Where he let he went to scoop up the ball until he noticed it was rolling behind him to the wall.
Yeah.
So,
excuse me, can you get my ball, mister? I was using that. So yeah, I think he was getting sent down because of his poor performance, because he wasn't hitting, and in addition to the bad attitude and the tweeting, it all just created a firestorm, and they just sent him down.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be back as soon as
he might as well be back. I mean, he'll hit again.
Yeah, he's going to hit. I mean, there's no doubt he's going to hit, and the team's winning again, so that's good. But, a guy getting sent down like that, do you recall anybody who's
had that? That happens. Yeah, it happens all the time that players get fined for breaking rules, whether they're rules or not.
What about foreign players? I don't remember any foreign players who were...
Tuffy, I think Tuffy got fined for...
Not fined, but sent down.
Coach. We got sent down for taking a Giants coach and pushing him up against the wall. But that'll get you sent down to the minors pretty much anywhere.
That'll get you 10.
We've had players who were released. We've had players who were released for going to the dentist.
But Mike's question was about guys who are leading their teams in home runs and RBI, guys who are really producing. And
that is pretty rare. Well, that's the point you made is that he wasn't producing at that moment. He was having a replay of his 2011 season, which he owned the Central League in April and May, or April, you know, until about April 10th, and then stopped hitting for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, he was leading the league. I can't say offhand.
Yeah.
If it was a Japanese player, the answer would be almost never.
Yeah.
Foreign players have a double standard. Foreign players, this is something that with the Marines, I think, may have been a bone of contention with some of the Japanese players on the Marines, that a guy like Benny Ogbayani, who was tremendous his first year here, one of the greatest first year performances of any foreigner, stayed a long time. Not if he had been a Japanese player, it would have been normal, but for a foreign player to stick around with the kind of performance he was getting routinely was probably grating to them. You know, how come we've got this foreigner and other teams released theirs?
Yeah. Well, all I can say is the teams tend to treat foreigners like rent-a-cars. You know, they drive them hard.
Sure.
They don't do any. All they do is put gas in them and they don't wash them.
That's a good analogy. I like that.
Good. I'm glad you like it. How's the new job going?
It is going well. It is busy as all heck, but very energetic and focused, so it's good fun. I will be at the ballpark a week from Wednesday.
You'll be doing the interview because I will not be going to a park a week from Wednesday. So okay. that'll be your turn to do an interview. So good. We're having a meeting right here on the show, people.
We'll be Lions and Tigers.
All right. Excellent.
So, okay, rent-a-cars. Good man.
All right. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for letting us spend some time with you this week.
We're going to drive off for another week, so please send your listeners questions either by email or MP3.
Or you can leave us a note on the Facebook page. You can find it at Japan Baseball Weekly on Facebook. Send your emails to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll get back to you.
That is the address for Mr. Gibson here, and thank you for listening, fellas and ladies.
And we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Bye-bye.